And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and Laurent has the weekend off. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too.
And you heard the news about Fidel?
I did.
You know, I thought it was appropriate because here's a dictator that spent more than 50 years fighting capitalism and he died on Black Friday.
It was a good day for many people. There were celebrations I saw in Miami and in various places. Nine presidents. Mm-hmm. He'd been through nine U.S. presidents.
Just missed going through another one.
Darn, didn't he?
He did. And also Florence Henderson died.
Yeah.
I was sad on that one.
I was very sad. Yeah. Carol Brady.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the story of two lovely men who I should have thought this one out better. I'm known for my terrible segues. Jason Hanna and Joe Riggs have been putting on the teddy bear party for 6 years. This is the sixth.
Yeah, this is our sixth year.
And the teddy bear party raises, not money, but raises teddy bears for places like Children's Hospital, the Family Equality Council, Equality Texas, Stand Up to Cancer, groups like that, so that when kids go into the hospital, they get a teddy bear. Who said gay people aren't nice? Jason, tell us, how did you get the idea to do this?
Well, the event actually started with a significant moment in my life. In 2011, my mom had just been diagnosed with cancer, and she was just now starting to undergo her treatment. And as a way to give her the strength to continue going through the chemo and the radiation, her passion was kids. That's what she loved above anything else. And so we decided to do a teddy bear drive in the honor of the battle she was just beginning. And all the teddy bears would be donated to children's in her name for kids undergoing, whether it be chemo, radiation, whatever it may be. But that was kind of the life point that got the teddy bears party started.
What difference does it make in a kid's life going into the hospital and getting a teddy bear?
It's pretty significant. Do you want to take?
Sure. Oh. Yeah. Because every child that goes to Children's Hospital ends up, they get a teddy bear. Mm-hmm. It's used as a comfort tool, as well as it's used as a teaching tool. So if a child has a broken arm, they'll wrap the arm of the teddy bear to mm-hmm. represent and to show the kid what's going to happen to them. So it's a great teaching tool. But from a personal thing, actually 2 years ago, one of our boys happened to go to the hospital for an outpatient procedure, and he got one of the teddy bears, which I like to think it was came from our cause. But they use a lot of teddy bears and different stuffed animals at Children's Hospital. But I think total they give out 26,000 teddy bears or stuffed animals a year.
Wow!
Because every child that goes through there, they get a stuffed animal. Our child got that stuffed animal as well, and it made a difference. As actually his favorite stuffed animal, he still sleeps with it every night. It's the one stuffed animal out of the, how many, 30, I don't know.
Yeah,
poor kid. Stuffed animals.
They have very deprived kids.
We've got lots of gay uncles.
And I tell you what, when he's like 35, he's going to love that teddy bear just as much.
Mm-hmm. It will be the lifelong friend.
Yeah. Yep.
But it is. That teddy bear goes everywhere. Mm-hmm. He goes from the bed, he comes down, he does breakfast with him, he takes him in the car. It is by far his favorite.
Road trips.
Road trips, yeah, exactly.
Wow.
He's part of the family.
Strap him in. Let's go.
So you've been doing this for 6 years. Okay, it went from just a teddy bear drive. What did you do next then?
So in 2011 was the first teddy bear party. I think we had 225 teddy bears that we donated in total. But then just as the years went by, we continued to expand. The following year, we actually did the first year in which there was a suggested donation in addition to the teddy bear. And I think the first year we had 200 attendees. The second year, I think we had over 300. And then just year after year, it continues to grow. And obviously, as it continues to grow, you know, we have to continue changing the venue and making it larger to accommodate everybody. So it's been great to watch it grow over year over year.
Okay, so it's going to be held next week, December 3rd, Saturday night. What time?
VIP starts at 7 and general admission starts at 8.
And it's going to be at the thing that's next door to the Tesla dealership. What is that place called?
It's actually called 6500.
Oh, okay. 6500 Cedar Springs.
Easy to remember.
It's right at Cedar Springs and Mockingbird, just across from Love Field. It used to be an antique mall.
Correct, yeah.
But it's on the side that faces Cedar Springs.
Correct.
But it's easier to remember as the thing that's attached to the Tesla dealership. That's what their invitation said.
Correct. But to note that Tesla...
The ad is going to say that in the paper next week, too.
But Tesla isn't the sponsor. Park Place is. So we're going to have to separate Tesla so we can advocate and showcase Park Place.
Okay. Absolutely. You want to do that with your sponsor.
Okay, so they were voted last year best social event in the LGBT community.
Best party for a cause.
That's right. Best party for a cause. Okay.
Yeah. Does this have anything to do with bears?
Teddy bears.
Just checking.
All people are invited.
Always have to clarify.
Now, Park Place Maserati is their sponsor, so there'll be a couple of Maseratis there, because Black Tie Dinner just gets, you know, cheap old Mercedes.
Right.
There's a little bit. A little bit better than that. How did you come up with what to do at the party? Because it just grew.
I think it's changed from year to year, and we've always had a photo booth. That's always been a big hit. One year we tried a butt sketch artist, which was different, and I think everybody liked it. But it takes a
Patty wouldn't have.
I actually had the butt sketch guy that used to be down at the West End. You know, in the 80s, I had a sketch done by him. Mm-hmm. Back when my butt was actually pretty good little butt.
It's a nice butt.
It's a nice butt. It's changed a little bit over the years, but yeah, in the day.
All of us, they all are.
But I guess it's become really, it feels like the holiday party where it's friends getting together during the holiday time. Everybody's dressing up, a lot of bow ties. I mean, you see it all from a dress perspective. But I think what's really impactful is that everybody brings a teddy bear or stuffed animal that they think a kid at children's...
Or two or ten.
Or two. We do. Some people bring multiple, for sure. And they're used as part of the decor, and they're put on the walls. So they have shelves, and we have teddy bear trees as well. So at the halfway through the night, and when everybody's there, you just look around and you see hundreds and hundreds of teddy bears that you know are going to a good cause, and it's like...
Okay, so for anybody who wants to come, this is just open for anybody. You don't need tickets in advance.
It's suggested that you buy them online.
Just because it's easier.
Yeah. Teddybearparty.org. You can go online and buy tickets. So it's a suggested donation for tickets and then a teddy bear for entry.
Okay, so it's different age kids that are getting these. So is there one size bear that people should bring, or...
I think all sizes. I mean, if you think about our little guys, when he had his procedure, you know, he was only 9 months old, 10 months old. So, you know, a teddy bear that's, you know, 8 to 12 inches. But if you have a toddler that's 2.5 to 3, that's 3 feet tall, you know, an 18 to 24 inch teddy bear is probably ideal.
We like the diversity of teddy bears. Actually.
Diversity.
Yeah. And we see it all. People go to Build-A-Bear or they bring a stuffed horse that they found. You know, it's all good.
You got to have sometimes, though, especially right before Christmas, somebody brings one of those coveted things that's the hot item for the year, maybe, and then some kid gets it. Yeah. You know, at the hospital, like an Elmo. You know, parents can't get any more Elmos. Elmos are going off the shelves. Look, I got an Elmo at the hospital.
Now, that's cool. And it's funny, actually, teddy bears, we found that near the party, they're sold out in most of the stores around. Because of the teddy bear party. I mean, there's not all that many in the Metroplex from, you think of Target or wherever else to go to buy a teddy bear.
Yeah, they were talking about, you know, 100, 200 bears the first year or two. How many did you give last year?
Last year, we donated 2,600 teddy bears.
Wow.
And they plan to do more this year. So, I mean, it's growing. This is a major thing. Yeah, 2,600. Stores are out of teddy bears.
We had we had friends last year that actually had to drive to Plano to buy teddy bears because
wow,
uptown
was
out.
Wow.
Okay, now I have my limits.
Plano, it's not far. That's a leave the county and everything.
I have my limits. I mean, this station's in North Dallas. We're almost at LBJ. I can't go beyond. I mean, it was tough for me because I had to go north of Mockingbird when the station moved up here. So.
Yeah,
we haven't made it past LBJ yet. But
so get your teddy bear early. And the other thing is, it's an open bar party. So
Patty can go and get drunk.
VIP, yeah.
So the cost of a teddy bear, you could.
Right, and all of the monetary donation, it is a donation. It's part of, we're a 501(c). So it is tax deductible, as well as that money. The party is completely underwritten by the sponsors, so that money goes directly to the beneficiaries. So there is actually a monetary component, and that monetary component split between several different organizations, including Stand Up to Cancer, Family Equality Council, Equality Texas, mm-hmm. which is the other kind of big.
And Rainbow Roundup.
And Rainbow Roundup is a new sponsor, or new beneficiary this year. So
who is Rainbow Roundup? I don't know them.
So they're also a 501(c)(3) focused on LGBT families in the DFW, well, mostly in the Dallas area. But they put together monthly events, weekly and monthly events for LGBT families. And so it was another organization that we wanted to support here locally, in addition to the ones that are statewide and national beneficiaries.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And of course, Equality Texas Foundation and Family Equality Council, we said.
Correct.
Correct. Those are long-time, really important organizations in our collective national community, mm-hmm. Texas community.
Right. And that's to your question about how it started, and that's kind of the evolution of the party, of the Teddy Bear Party, is that we were going through, when we had our boys, we ran into issues with adopting our kids. And I think we can probably go into the story, but the bottom line is that organizations like Family Equality Council and Equality Texas helped us navigate how to get our kids adopted after a judge denied the adoption of our kids. So they were instrumental in making sure that we were taking care of a family, and they're just amazing organizations that there's just so much. There's so much work that still needs to be done. I mean, we've got marriage equality, but there's so much that needs to be done here in Texas to continue to support the LGBT families.
You know, and you had to go through, and we'll go through the whole story, but you had to go through actually adopting your kids because you had to cross-adopt each other's kids. Adopting is such a mess. It should be so much easier to do and encouraged more, because at any one time we have over 70,000 kids in foster care who need permanent homes.
In Texas.
Yeah, I'm not talking about U.S. That's in Texas only. Okay, so first of all, Patty and I were not born with the parenting gene. Neither were you, Josh.
I did have a teddy bear. Well cared for, I might add.
Not born with the parenting gene at all.
Four-legged family members and children, right?
Oh, yes.
Yes. You can't forget them.
Yes.
Yeah. Also well cared for.
Yes.
In fact, they should be caring for us. We accommodate them way too much in our lives. Let's get a new couch. Let's think about the dogs being up on the couch.
Yep. But in a way, our generation is kind of this odd in-between generation. At the LGBT aging summits, they've talked about this, how generations that were older than us who were gay tended to get married and have kids, and so as they got older, they had family to take care of them. Your generation is having kids, and you're going to go through that normal cycle of having people to take care of them. I don't know about you, but I've told several of my cousins' kids, I'm going to be a very great burden on you.
Oh, and I bet ready. You will.
Oh, I will.
I bet you'll crank that right up.
Oh yeah. So they're expecting. With Lauren and Danny, the day they met, they were talking about having kids together. They hadn't gone on a date yet, but that was part of their first discussion.
And now they have a kid.
How did you start How did you approach each other about your desire to even have kids?
We did talk about it day one.
Yeah, I think that was always part of our discussions as we were dating. Like we both
like
wanted
date one.
Kids.
You said, "Wow."
Yeah, I think it was part of that date one. It was very early in the conversations.
Yeah, we both knew we wanted family and that we wanted children.
Okay. I mean, my answer, if I was going out with somebody, would be, oh, God, no. But, and I love kids. I'm always the greatest uncle because I bring the kids the most obnoxious toys. The kids love them. Drives the parents crazy.
You sugar them up and send them home.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. How do you even bring that up to each other? And I'm saying this because when we were younger and dating and... You know, last year, it was something that just it didn't even come up. So, how do you even approach that kind of thing with each other?
I don't think I really put any thought into like approaching it.
It becomes almost like it'd be nice. I would like to have kids. I think part of it is too is the logistics of how do you make that happen, whether adoption or surrogacy. So it's not one of those. Easy paths necessarily, but is it something that we're both interested in? Yes. So maybe it's a little bit different and easier conversation early on that'd be cool. I would like to do that. And I think we both wanted to, but it's a long path, long road to get there too.
Oh yeah. Especially with the answers like, yes, we want kids. Well, I remember how we did it. I remember how Aaron and I did it. I said, how do you feel about kids? And Aaron said, who's kids?
maybe we're just on the same
that's
page
that's
that,
more polite than my answer. But you know, I don't remember it ever coming up on a date though. Seriously, because it just wasn't much of an option when I was young enough to have children and not feel like, oh my God, that's I'm old enough to have grandchildren now.
And more.
And more. I know.
We won't go there.
Why don't we take a break? We'll talk about this a little bit more after the break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guests are Jason Hanna and Joe Riggs. They are putting on the Teddy Bear Party, and that is next Saturday, December 3rd. We'll talk more about that and about having kids right after the break.
Hi, this is Valletta Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here with the late Patty Fink. And we're talking about the Teddy Bear Party with Jason Hanna and Joe Riggs. It's going to be on December 3rd. You need to bring a teddy bear or two or ten. You can make a donation. Suggest a donation of?
The suggested donation for general admission is $50.
Okay.
And then VIP is
$150. And they collect...
You said it's an open bar.
It is an open bar party, yep.
And so, it's on a Saturday night, so...
Oh, God. Are you bringing Aaron?
You'll save money by coming to the Teddy Bear Party and donating to a great
cause. Oh, especially she will if she brings Aaron.
Yeah, especially. That's right. So we should, do that.
Yeah, you need to. Okay, so just before the break, we were talking about the difference in our generations. Because Patty, especially, and I are much older, we didn't generally even think about having kids. Did you ever seriously think about it?
No. I actually, when we do those classes at the police academy, I always tell my story as I felt different at about the age of 4 or 5, and I didn't know anything about being gay or any kind of sexuality whatsoever. But I knew how I was different was when I saw June and Ward Cleaver, and I always have to explain that. I don't know why, but a lot of people go, who are you talking about? Leave It to Beaver and the Munsters and Donna Reed and, you know, all of those that, you know, dad goes to work, mom stays home with the kids. It's like, that's not going to happen in my life. I just, that whole scenario, I just thought was never going to happen in my life. Mm-hmm. And that's the way kind of I grew up. I just knew I was different, and I was different because that wasn't going to happen.
So you
and
were...
That's what happened.
You were different than Lily Munster, huh?
Yes. So it never even occurred to me in my thoughts that I would be having kids because I would not be having a husband. You know what I mean? And that, well, the only way you get kids and have a family is because you get married to a guy, you know, and that's, and so early on I knew that wasn't in my life.
Oh, well, see, with them, see, Joe married Jason, so he had a guy.
Yes.
So that's how it works. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the options have really broadened, especially in the last few years with surrogacy. I mean, there's always been adoption. And the gay community has been adopting for years. Child Protective Services, if you ask them, we've saved them over the years.
And continue to. They need more saving
right.
in this state, for sure.
So what was your discussion like about having your own kids or adopting? Or
I think our... Because we did talk about doing adoption versus surrogacy. Mm-hmm. And we both always wanted to go through the surrogacy route. Adoption was never off the table. But I think our preference was, and it may be a selfish aspect, but having our own biological children. And so, I mean, yeah, surrogacy was kind of always our first choice.
Okay, so where do you go from there? It's one thing to say we like to do surrogacy. It's different to say, Patty, can I borrow your uterus for 9 months?
You know, our...
And your ova.
That too.
Our process was very fast-tracked. We went out to dinner with a friend of ours that had gone through surrogacy, and the wife of the fertility doctor joined us that evening at dinner. And so we were talking to her, and we were just dating at the time, and, you know, we want kids long-term, and, you know, she kind of took all those mental notes and took our information, and I think within 2 or 3 days, she sent us a message going, I've got the perfect surrogate for you. And so she connected us with the surrogate, and we're like, okay, good match. She liked us, we liked her, and worked out well, and then we're like, all right, well, I guess we're doing this.
Which in the surrogacy world, that probably saved us $15,000 to $20,000, because typically you go through an agency that arranges all that for you and matches
does all
you
the vetting
surrogate
and
vets
yep.
them. Yeah, but this was an experienced surrogate, and the doctor was recommending this surrogate, and so we got an attorney and drafted up the paperwork, and things happened really fast, like you said.
Very fast. So within probably 5 months of meeting the wife of the fertility doctor, we were in the process and going kind of full speed.
But you were ahead. Just dating at the time.
We were. However, we fast-tracked our wedding as well, because we did not want the boys to be born
out of wedlock.
Yeah, we had already discussed the whole, I think you had, the timing of this, we were already engaged.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, so we were already engaged when we were having this conversation. So it was just more of, when are we going to get married? Because are we going to go have a long engagement? I mean, what do we really want? I never had my big wedding dreams of what I wanted.
I did.
And
I
he did.
But see, that's the kind of parallels a lot of straight marriages and what happens if they have to get married.
Yeah.
You know, this is happening. We have to get married. We want to be married before the baby's born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did.
So,
we,
you know, it's very traditional.
We planned a wedding in 3 months. We got married in August, and the boys were born in April. So
it was actually that we technically got pregnant as far as the boys.
I was just doing the math in my head. I was going to say, I don't know if it counts if
it's
you got
sort of
pregnant
it's,
first.
It's our second wedding.
There's still
honeymoon
a set.
Baby. For a week for honeymoon baby. That's what actually on our honeymoon is when we got confirmation of being pregnant. So that to us.
Well, and to add to that, we were on an Atlantis cruise, and so we were probably
lots of pregnancies. Begin on an Atlantis cruise.
Maybe attempts, but not actually. Sorry.
But we didn't get confirmation. Not the boat.
We were probably the only gay couple on the boat saying, oh, we're pregnant. Literally.
Actually, that would be Olivia Cruz's where.
Right.
Where many women find out. No, they don't. I don't know where I'm going with that today. Okay, so having kids is real cheap.
Not in adoption or surrogacy.
So you didn't have to pay for the looking for the surrogate. You said the doctor thought that she was a good surrogate.
Correct.
Why? What makes somebody a good surrogate?
We were her fourth surrogacy. So meaning that she does very well with carrying the kids and has, I mean, it takes, to be a surrogate and to carry someone else's baby, that takes the right mental mind frame too, to mm-hmm. understand that this baby, like, you have to be, there's a very selfless act to do that, because carrying a child, I've never done it, but my understanding, and for witnessing a lady carry twins, that's not an easy deal.
Right.
Not at all. So they have to have the right mental mind frame that this is somebody else's baby, and at the end I'm going to give this baby up to them, and they're going to have an amazing family together. So there's that aspect, and and just the basic medical.
I would think piece. It would need to be something more than just I'm just doing it for the money too. You know, you want her to have the right mindset that she's giving them up, but I'm just doing it for the money.
That's really mercenary.
And I'd almost be worried, is she going to take good care of them while she's carrying them?
Those thoughts do go through your mind, because she is carrying your children, your child. And
what she eats, your kids eat, basically. And
right.
But, I mean, her personally, she wanted to help a family that couldn't have kids be a family and have kids. So, yes, there is the monetary aspect, but there was also, she had that desire to help. And we were her first same-sex family that she helped. She helped straight couples. But she wanted to help us, and she was a phenomenal surrogate.
That's Do you keep exciting. In touch with her at all?
Not so much anymore. But, I mean, you know, we talk to her on birthdays and whatnot, but that's about it.
Yeah, and that's what Laurent said. They send a picture on the birthday and for Christmas, something like that. Well, it's the same time.
Right. And I remember the first time I saw surrogacy, like, in the media, like, out there portrayed. Well, the most recent ones, I guess, but what really struck me, this is a story of surrogacy, was Law and Order Criminal Intent. Did you guys ever watch that show? Mm-hmm. Detective Ames carried her sister's child because she was unable to go full term and because of her health. And so she carried her sister's baby for her. And it was kind of like not the thread in the over the season, but it was significant enough that you got a little bit of understanding what she was really doing. And that kind of middle space where it's not my kid, but I love this kid, and I'm going to care about this kid and do this right. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of portrayed really very well. So I thought, well, then we'll start talking about this then.
When we first started talking about surrogacy, and in Laurent's case, the surrogate was the mother, was the egg donor.
Right.
Did you do that, or a separate egg donor?
We had a separate egg donor. So it was not her biological kid that she was carrying. Yeah. For kids.
For the egg donor, we went through an agency. So we've never had any contact with her or vice versa. If we were ever to need to contact her for a medical reason, we would have to go through an agency. She doesn't have our info and vice versa.
Okay, so if one of the kids developed some kind of a something and you want to find out if there's a
genetic component.
Do they give you a genetic
They do. It's map an interesting or something? Process. Yeah. It's kind of like there's, as far as looking for your baby mama, if you will, you kind of end up shopping through profiles of potential egg donors, and all of them from a like broad medical history perspective have already been, they have to pass certain criteria to even become an egg donor, so they won't make the cut to be in that catalog to begin with. But it was an interesting, odd process of like, what do you want? And I mean, there's some basic things like you get like SAT scores, and you get like what their interests were in high school, because most of these women that are egg donors are probably, they're between 18 and I think 24 is too old almost as far as an egg donor, because that's, I guess, from fertility, basic fertility is, that's their most fertile, and that's if you're getting the eggs at that point, that's how you improve your odds. So most of them are very young. So as far as life accomplishments, I don't know about you, but I didn't have much figured out by the time I was 24. So it's, you get some basic criteria and information about them, and
but you also get like the parents' background, like their medical background. What's their college? You know, what do they do career wise? So, I mean, you get this whole broad perspective, and then you get pictures of her as a kid. You get pictures of her family, so you get a sense of who she is.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool, because it's very similar to women I know who've done the sperm donor thing, where you go and look at through profiles and you get the same sorts of information, and and then you make your selection.
So what were you looking for? Were you looking for different things? I mean, if it was you, Patty, I know you'd say, no, one Baylor parent's enough. We don't need to produce a Ken Starr rapist. So. And that's genetic.
Right, right.
What were you looking for?
Well, I think one of the aspects, I mean, as Joe mentioned, she was early 20s, so still going through school. She was going to a beautician school. But then, I think her mother was a nurse, so it was kind of one of those, the nurse, the compassion aspect, the people person of that career. And then I think her dad was a small business owner.
You look at her test score, it's you look at all of, the full package, and it's tough because that was, certain things you don't love about her profile, but then certain things you do. It's a trade-off. It's a weird catalog shopping for your baby mama. There's no I don't know if there's a perfect person out there.
Yeah, there's not. That would be.
It's kind of funny because initially you can send the agency, hey, these are my top seven, top eight. Do you want a white egg donor, Hispanic, whatever it may be? And so when we filled out our paperwork, we said, we'd prefer a white egg donor, but we're open to Hispanic, we're open to XYZ. And so they initially sent us back of kind of our top five to eight choices, and they were all Hispanic women. And we're like, okay, so these are the best of her database. And so we were going
one and really liked her, and
we picked one, and we were going through the process, and then there was just some delays and some issues, and so we came a little hesitant. And we're like, all right, we should get a backup in case in case she falls out. And so she sent us another list, and we're like, well, these are all Hispanic women, she was like, yeah, well, I've got your list of priorities is that you prefer a Hispanic egg donor, and then the secondary choice is a white egg donor. And I'm like, well, actually, it was the other way around. We wanted a white egg donor and then a Hispanic. It was one of those, total foo-paw on behalf of the agency. And she's like, oh, no, I didn't realize that's what you wanted. So you have to be very clear in terms of what your preferences are, or they can get mixed up pretty quickly.
Yeah, and it's all perfect. It's weird.
Yeah,
the whole thing is weird because usually it's just you go based on personality or what's your interaction, how you feel about them. But it's weird to make cuts like that on this is what I want from a race or personal characteristics. I want somebody with blue eyes, which weird, which was not part of our criteria. But you can do that if you want.
How many couples can she donate to? Because there's a limited number of eggs that you can take. Women don't continue producing eggs.
When they're young, I think it's just every cycle. I think they can produce. They may have to wait every other cycle. So
we need just biology.
I'm not a doctor. I have no idea.
The moment that a woman is born is born, she has all the eggs she's ever going to have.
Right.
Are already ready to go, and they're just released into the fallopian tube on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. So the eggs are all there. You can go in and extract them.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. There's a limited number, though. It's not like you have a certain number of eggs now, and if you take those eggs, she's going to make some more eggs.
No, that's not, you're right.
The fertility cycle is just based on that monthly cycle and the eggs that are retrieved at that during that month cycle.
Okay.
Yeah. So in theory, she could probably donate once a month. It's probably medically they probably do every other month. But at the same time, from an agency perspective, they probably limit the number of donations because you don't want to have one baby mama with so many kids out there. I don't know. I don't know if this is me speculating, but I assume you can't just continue
to donate
over and over again.
I don't know what the procedure is, but I suspect the procedure is much more involved than what it might be for sperm donors.
We can verify for the donations.
The magazines or anything.
A little more invasive.
Right. So that might not be something that they go back and do over and over.
Okay, so here is where I was going with that. So your kids might have some half brothers and sisters out there somewhere.
We know they do.
Okay,
because we were her second donation. So they definitely have some older siblings.
Because I have a cousin who, his first wife, kind of went a little bit nuts. Had two kids with her. And just a few years ago, my cousins, who are 40 now, they met their mother for the first time. and they found out that she had been married God knows how many other times, or not married, and just had a number of other kids with a number of other people. So they have like half a dozen brothers and sisters that they just learned about.
But that has nothing to do with surrogacy.
No, it has nothing to do with surrogacy. It has to do with the beginning of my question. Because the way my mind works, I was thinking of my cousin Alyssa. The records are kept pretty much sealed, though. They right. won't find out who their brothers and sisters are, even when they're adults. Will they?
Correct. Unless they specifically request that once they're 18, I think. Because we mentioned the medical need. If there's a medical need to contact her. Well, and we still wouldn't, as far as, we still have to contact the agency and then they contact her. So there'd still be an intermediary then.
But also talking, like, learning if there's other siblings out there, half-siblings, like, I doubt we would ever get to that. Because then you have to have the other
sealed files.
Parents release yeah. their information. And
I'm not talking yeah. about now. I'm talking about yeah, right. when they're adults.
Later. Right. So.
That would be quite a needle in the thread.
Yeah.
It's with all of those moving parts, you know. But you said your kids are twins? Are they identical?
Fraternal. Yeah. Well, we got very lucky in that we transferred two embryos to the surrogate, and one's biologically mine and one's biologically Jason's, but they're both our kids.
That's really very cool.
We need to take a break. We'll talk about that after the break. We're talking to Jason Hanna and Joe Riggs. They are putting on the teddy bear party, which has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
It does. Kids, family.
Giving teddy bears to kids that have to go into children's hospital or to who are involved with Stand Up to Cancer or one of these other wonderful organizations that they support. Is this the largest teddy bear party given in Dallas?
Dallas?
Or the only one that you know of?
Only one we know of.
That's okay. The only one I know of.
So it's the biggest collection of teddy bears here in Dallas. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
I'm Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. We're talking about the Teddy Bear Party, which is December 3rd at 6500, which is an event space on the corner of Cedar Springs and Mockingbird. It's next, a week from Saturday. No, it's
this coming Saturday.
Yeah.
Today is... No, it's a week from yesterday.
Correct.
So it's this coming Saturday.
Yeah.
And it's at 8...
VIP starts at 7 and general admission at 8.
At 8. You can go online to teddybearparty.org to get tickets. It's a suggested donation, but bring teddy bears because you'd like to give thousands to some of these wonderful organizations. KNON, we just played one of our spots about it. KNON's doing our annual toy drive also for Children's Medical Center of Dallas. And we were talking here in the studio. I didn't get the information. I was just going to repeat it a little bit. But you can always drop off toys here at the studio at 11311 North Central Expressway, and those will go to kids at Children's Hospital, too. Okay, so Jason and Joe had twins. They're 2 years old. One is Jason's, one's Joe's. Because... when the eggs are fertilized, you can actually choose which ones are going to be implanted.
Correct. So you can actually... Well, so once they're 5 days, 6 days post-fertilization, you can do genetic testing on those embryos and to ensure that they're viable. There's no genetic abnormalities, chromosomal issues, things to that extent. And a byproduct of doing that testing, they can also determine the gender of those embryos as well. And so we decided that we wanted two boys, twin boys. So we transferred his only boy embryo out of five, and we transferred one of my boy embryos, and we were blessed that they both took on the first transfer.
Yeah. We say we decided to do two boys, but initially we were going to do a boy and a girl. We were going back and forth, like, what do we really want to do? And then we saw two little boys interacting at a pool, and they're having such a good time, like, as brothers, being probably a year apart, and we saw that bond between them, and that just looked like such a good time, like they were We grew up together with such a great bond, and that's why we ended up transferring the two boys instead.
And they're already 2 years old. Yeah. You're tired of them, so now you're going to have... now it's time to have some girls.
We're in the terrible twos.
Yeah. That must be such joy.
It's their personalities are taking full shape, and it's the cutest time, and it's also can be very frustrating.
So parts of that vision are true. They are best friends at times, and then worst enemies at most of the other
times. It's the same with sisters. Yeah. You know, I mean, you love them to death, but you just hate their guts sometimes.
Biting, spitting, we got it all right now. Potty training adds another fun element. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah. They were born before marriage equality.
Yes, national, nationwide.
Because they were born 2015.
Yeah,
2014.
2014. Yeah, I can subtract 16 minus 2.
And marriage equality was in 2015.
2015. Yeah. So they were born 2014, the year before.
You don't need math for that.
And so...
No, I need a memory. So you still have to go through an adoption. Because biologically... One is yours, Jason. One's yours, Joe. So you'd still have to go through the adoption in order for them to be each other's children, we think. Because under Texas law, actually, if you're married and one of you has a child, it's assumed to be both of your children. But we're not sure if that applies when you didn't biologically have the child, and neither is Texas. Sure, I think is the way it stands right now.
It's resolved now.
And is it?
It's resolved now.
No, but I mean, so what's the resolution on that?
The resolution now, as a result of marriage equality and the subsequent contempt charge against our attorney general, the two parent adoptions were resolved in regulatory law.
Two-parent adoptions, but if one of the children is biologically Jason's and Joe wants to be on that birth certificate too, does he have to go through the adoption if they're married at the time of the birth? A straight couple would not have to if the woman gives birth. It's assumed that it's the husband's child.
I think in Texas, as a result of I'll check with Chuck Smith at Equality Texas, but my understanding is that ruling and that regulatory change in law statewide and all of those vital documents that it's assumed also
okay
that in a gay couple,
but their names are not on each other's kids' birth certificates. Yeah. What's the name? Just one name?
Yeah, in 2014, there's just one name on each of their birth certificates. And we actually switched, too, didn't we?
Yeah.
So that his name is on his non-biological child.
Right.
Because at the time, it was still mother, father.
Yep.
Right. And that's what changed with the mother and father. It's parent one and parent two, I believe, now.
Okay. So you filed it in absolutely the wrong county. What happened? You did. You filed in Tarrant County, which of all the urban counties has the least friendly family court judges to the gay and lesbian community in the state. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say.
And Dallas County has a loving judicial system.
Well,
I should say.
You know, in Dallas County, I've heard family court judges say, you know, I spend my whole day with divorces and people fighting with each other, and you know they're arguing over assets, and we're tearing families apart. A gay couple comes in with a kid. It's my greatest joy to correct their birth certificate for them and put this family together. Why family court judges would do anything else, but yours did.
Well, and that was the interesting thing. Exactly.
We won't name her this time.
And that was our... We couldn't understand that either, is that you had a surrogate who had no biological ties to these two boys and had signed the paperwork to terminate, because she did have parental rights over them because she carried them, signed all the paperwork to terminate, and then we also had all the DNA tests proving that these are our children, and the judge denied it. And it's like, what's in the best interest of these two little boys, a woman who wants nothing to do with them, or their biological dads?
Is she straight?
Yes.
The straight woman. Yeah. I'll have to go with her.
But we ended up in Tarrant County because that's where the surrogate lived at the time. So
you were doing what seemed convenient and made sense.
It was what...
You don't do that. How long have you lived in Texas?
Our attorney's approach was that he was going based on the letter of the law of how this should be structured, and he was structuring it around the law at the time as far as two-parent adoptions. And so I think, what, to your point, though, a good attorney knows the law, a great attorney knows the judge, and our attorney did not know this judge. So we ended up going to this courtroom, and the judge had a very planned answer, at least from my perspective. I felt like it was a very planned answer and response that she stuck to. Her script of, based on the information in front of me, I just can't get there. And every time our attorney asked for more information, like, how do you get there? Because typically a judge will give you guidance. Well, I can't get there because of XYZ. Come back with something else. She was not even giving us anything. For me, it was that big wake-up call. Oh, yeah, judges are elected officials that have political motivations that... You know, my vote really matters, and I should. It's so easy when voting this past November. It's so easy just to go through that list of, like, I don't know who all these people are. I know who I want to vote for president, but all these other people, those other people are important,
yeah,
especially
the
family courts. Man, and that was a prime example of her judgment in that courtroom at the time was based on political motivations. And maybe it would have been bigger news for a Republican judge to grant an adoption to a gay couple. Maybe that would have been a bigger news story than her denying it. But it did get pretty good press at the time.
She didn't deny the adoption. She denied you having your name on your biological child's birth certificate.
She put her kids in limbo. It became a question.
She denied the adoption.
She denied that. Yeah. She, based on the information in front of me, I just can't get there. Yeah.
She basically denied the birth.
she put them in complete limbo, because otherwise the surrogate technically has custody, legal custody. I mean, there's no other.
But you went home with your kids.
Correct.
They never left. Not the surrogate.
Correct.
But it was just a very scary legal time. Like, what do we do now?
We had essentially temporary guardianship, because she had to sign away for us to take our kids home. We had temporary guardianship of our boys until the court ruled.
Okay, so you got this corrected by going to a decent county. Sorry, Darren.
Well, through the help of some great Equality Texas, this is where Equality Texas, as well as Family Equality Council and Lambda Legal, they helped us navigate and how do we get out of this mess. And they also helped share the story at the time, because this is like a prime example of how nuts the system is that we can't adopt our own biological kids in this county.
And that's what's crazy, because it's happening all over the country.
Right.
It's not just you guys in Tarrant County.
Not in Dallas.
It could be lots of people across the 254 counties of Texas and in other states as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, what happened to you is not unique.
Right.
You know, that's a lot of families are being
affected. During the break, Patty, you were telling the story of two women who crossed.
Yeah. Iron Chef Kat Cora and her wife Jennifer in California. This was before California, you know, allowed adoption and second parent adoptions and such. And so they both got pregnant about the same time with sperm donors. And then they switched embryos. And so Kat carried her wife Jennifer's embryo, and Jennifer carried Kat's, and then they had boys at about the same time. But because one was a biological parent, one was the birth mother, they were both able to be on the birth certificate.
That's genius. That's awesome.
It was really, really smart, and they did it twice, and so they have four boys now. And so that, you know, of course now the law's changed, certainly in California, but you know, it was a way.
But they weren't married at the time, were they?
No, they weren't.
It's
married.
Shameful.
Yeah, exactly.
Our guys here were married.
But again, Family Equality Council and Equality Texas, that's what they're still continuing to help change the laws associated with it. And that's one of the reasons they're one of our beneficiaries, monetary beneficiaries, from the Teddy Bear Party. So,
which is December 3rd at 6500 right. Cedar Springs, which is an event space. It's right next to the Tesla, not dealership, but service. Whatever. But Teslas don't have to get serviced.
And another quick plug for...
I want to know about
for
that.
For Dallas County judges, if you're trans and living in North Texas, you can contact Dallas Transcendence at the Dallas Resource Center. anyone associated with it. Dallas County judges are assisting in getting their ID documents changed before the Trump administration gets inaugurated. So there's a matter of like 51 days, I think it is, to get your documents changed before all of those executive orders that President Obama issued.
Trump's going to be great for the gays.
Oh, yeah. And the trans. And the transgender.
And the transes.
Right. So, but
he's going to be great for it.
This group is helping you expedite that. If you need fees, we're raising money. Sometimes they're filing fees in court and such, and doing it here in Dallas County where that's friendly to that process. So,
talking about fees, how much did just adopting your own kids end up costing you? They're turning red. Yeah. They're looking at each other.
I think we forgot to try something. The company I worked for at the time, Capital One, actually had it covered adoption as part of a benefit. It was pretty fantastic.
Mm.
They covered up to $10,000. There's a plug for my former employer, but it was a fantastic benefit that, as far as the support that they gave.
Oh, that is a wonderful benefit because...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is one of those things. It's one of the reasons also to go through CPS... because a lot of those expenses are covered also.
But in addition, I mean, Family Equality Council and Equality Texas did provide legal assistance to us at no cost. And that's why, going back to Joe's point, why, you know, they are beneficiaries of ours, because we do see the hard work and continued hard work needed to continue to advance equality.
Right. We just have one more minute. Teddy Bear Party. Give us a real quickie on it again for anybody who wasn't listening at the beginning of the
tickets,
show.
How to get tickets, where to go,
and what it is. TeddyBearParty.org. You can go there for the ticket purchases. It is December 3rd. We have VIP tickets still remaining. You can get those online for $150 or general admission at $50. The entire event is underwritten by all our corporate sponsorships and hosts, and so 100% of your ticket sales go directly to the beneficiaries. And we are a 501c3, so it's 100% deductible.
But it's open bar, come enjoy.
Open
bring
bar.
A teddy bear.
Bring a teddy bear.
And that's the thing, when you go, bring teddy bears.
You have to bring a teddy bear.
A teddy bear. Bring teddy bears.
Teddy bears. The more the better.
Teddy bears are any stuffed animal that a kid at Children's Hospital would really enjoy.
Right. That's Children's Hospital goes through, you said, 26,000 teddy bears a year.
Correct.
Every kid who goes to Children's gets a teddy bear. It makes their hospital stay, especially at the beginning when they're just real scared, makes it a little bit easier.
A little easier.
So, Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. We'll be at the party next week, and we'll be back next week with more Land Weekly.
Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.
It was a great show.
Yeah.